The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from Wright Memorial Public Library, Clark County Public Library, Tipp City Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Washington Centerville Public Library.
Hello, welcome to Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. I'm joined in the studio by Marjorie Wentworth. She has a new book out. It's called One River, One Boat, Occasional Poems and Other Stories. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
I see here on the cover it says that you were the South Carolina Poet Laureate from 2003 to 2020. How on earth does one become a Poet Laureate? Do you apply for the job? How does this happen?
Usually you do, but in my case, I was asked to do an inaugural poem for the governor-elect Mark Sanford. There was no poet laureate at the time. And then about 6 months later, I was just appointed.
And what are the job requirements for the poet laureate position? What do you have to do?
In general, the only requirement is to write a poem and recite it for a governor's inauguration. That's expected. And that's the first thing I did, in fact, you know, and then I was appointed after that. But
now, is he the guy that was hiking the Appalachian Trail?
Evidently.
Oh, okay.
Not.
Right, right.
Yes.
He claimed he was hiking
right,
the Appalachian
right,
Trail. I remember right, him now.
Right. He was right, serving in Congress.
Right,
then.
Right. And he actually had a lover in like Argentina. Right. Okay.
Very good. Yes. So that's Mark Sanford. Yes.
Okay.
Not a great way to become so widely known. So I would say that in general, poet laureates are expected to do that. And beyond that, it's really whatever you can do to create a bigger audience for poetry, to bring poetry into places it might not have existed. And you also should serve the writing community and work with the arts commissions in the state to get out and do all kinds of programs. You don't get paid.
Oh, you don't get paid?
No.
Well.
Yeah.
That's kind of shocking.
Well, I think in some places you are paid, but in my case, I got, you know, travel money and things, but that's about it.
I see. If you're just tuning in, my guest is Marjorie Wentworth. Her new book is One River, One Boat, Occasional Poems and Other Stories. How long have you been writing poetry? How long have you been a poet? What made you decide this is what you're going to do?
I don't think I decided consciously this is what I want to do. I just started writing poetry around middle school age, which is pretty common. I think it's a time when kids are confused and trying to express themselves, and maybe they don't want to talk about certain things. In my case, my father had leukemia, and I was in junior high, and I sure didn't want to go to school and talk about it. But I found that poems were a way to just kind of process what I was going through. I never intended to show them to anyone or anything like that. And then it just continued to be something I really loved doing right through high school and college, and ended up going to graduate school at NYU to study creative writing. So sort of a lifelong passion, I guess.
And your South Carolina accent seems to be non-existent. Therefore, you are not from South Carolina, are you?
Or they say in South Carolina, I'm from off.
Okay.
I'm from off.
Like way off?
Way off. Like
up northeast?
North of Boston off.
Uh-huh. Okay.
You know, a Yankee.
I'm not here in the Boston either.
Well, haven't lived there for a long time.
Can you regress for us?
Oh, in about 5 seconds. Uh-oh. I'm Maggie from, yes, I can regress.
Okay.
Yeah, I pick it up when I'm with my friends from high school.
Do you have something prepared to read for us?
Sure. I have a whole book, but I'll spare you. I think I'd like to read a poem I just wrote for Springfield. Or do you want me to start with a poem from the book? It's your call, Vic.
Springfield. I think I've heard that word in the news recently. Wow. Springfield, you live there,
That's
right?
That's my new hometown.
Okay.
Now everybody knows Springfield.
I want to hear this.
All right. So because the book is occasional poems written for in response to an occasion like a governor's inauguration or any number of celebratory things as well. But I felt that these last couple of weeks in Springfield called out for an expression of love and just some words that maybe would help bring us together. So the poem is a very early draft, but I'll share it with you. It's called There Are No Strangers Here. And I have an epigraph from John Legend. All of me loves all of you. It's probably his most famous famous line from a song. And he's from Springfield, and his family, his parents still live there. How recently the fireflies scattered across our lawns and cornfields, dazzling us each evening. These small miracles appeared like flashes of hope, no matter how difficult the day had been. How quickly the light has dimmed as a cloud descended on our town. Because everyone is the other to someone, because it is easier to scapegoat and blame a stranger who is different for our problems, because hate spreads too easily across the internet in lies and memes, we wake now in a swirl of anger and fear as bombs threaten our children. It is time to turn away from the hovering darkness and move toward one another, where we will find flashes of love scattered and shining everywhere we look.
Marjorie Wentworth, and the name of that poem is?
There Are No Strangers Here.
Yeah. Well, it's true that hate spreads too easily, but if you listen to these candidates, they are saying that Haitians spread too easily.
Well, and that's where that comes from, a place of hate.
Truly.
And it's causing a lot of pain in Springfield. And I'm also feeling a lot of love coming from the community. And I think we have to outweigh that hate with love. So I know that sounds cliche, but that's what we need right now.
What's the vibe there now in Springfield at this moment today as you were walking around? Weren't you out walking your dog today?
Yeah, I was out walking my dog through Wittenberg campus and didn't see anybody. I think things have quieted down a little bit because children are back in the schools, only because the governor sent in state troopers. But there are these huge towers now, or at least there's one downtown and I think one somewhere else. It's sort of a security camera on top of a tower that's supposed to keep people safe. I think people are frightened and angry that this has happened. I think the Haitians are feeling the fear more than anyone. A lot of them are just kind of staying home and going to work and not going out, just out of fear. And I think everyone's trying to keep everyone safe and hope that things will return to normal as soon as possible.
And now there are rumors that some of these candidates might actually come to the area. Isn't that kind of like throwing gasoline on a fire?
That's exactly what it's like. And the mayor and the city leaders and the governor are saying, please don't come. Please don't come. I mean, they're working so hard to keep the citizens of Springfield safe. And to have a candidate come in, particularly the candidates who initiated and you know, began this horrible statements about the Haitian immigrants, would be terrifying.
And if you've been living in a vacuum and you're not aware of this controversy, these are immigrants who are here legally under a government mandate that allows them to be here. They're not illegal immigrants as some of these candidates are claiming they are.
Yeah, there's a lot of misinformation. I mean, they have what's called TPS, Temporary Protected Status, which actually started during the George Bush administration. And it's really designed for people who are fleeing a really dangerous situation. And, you know, it is temporary, and it's the federal government. So the idea that the city government really can make decision about this isn't accurate. So there's a lot of misinformation and a lot of people trying to, you know, deflect that.
If you're just tuning in, my guest is Marjorie Wentworth. Her new book is One River, One Boat, Occasional Poems and Other Stories. You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, sharing community voices through inspired storytelling. And Marjorie was the Poet Laureate of South Carolina from 2003 to 2020. And she mentioned that she gave a poem for the office occupation of Governor Mark Sanford. You also wrote poems for another governor who's, I think, a little more familiar to our listeners. And I get the impression that there was some controversy involved with these poems.
Sure. I had written one inaugural poem for Governor Nikki Haley, who, as you're right, people know who she is now because she ran for president and was our UN ambassador as well before that. And then for her second inauguration, I wrote a poem called One River, One Boat. And not only was I not asked to read the poem, but I was not invited to the inauguration. Media found out about it, and a lot of people were really upset. And Congressman Jim Clyburn is from South Carolina, and he read it into the congressional record and gave a little speech about it, and then it was also read in the state Senate by State Senator Marlon Kimson. The main reason I wasn't asked to read the poem is because at the time, now this was January 2015, the Confederate flag was still flying on the State House steps. It had been on the top of the State House, and they, as a compromise, moved it down. But I kept thinking, I'm going to have to be standing there looking at that Confederate flag and all that it stands for. And I mentioned that. There's a line in the poem that says, here where the Confederate flag still flies beside the State House, et cetera. So that was probably the piece that they didn't want to have mentioned. But the larger point of the poem is really about the people of South Carolina and the sense that we've inherited a history there because of our history of being, you know, the place where African Americans were brought and sold and held in slavery in massive numbers. The feeling was, we're not going to talk about that. Mm-hmm. So I have nothing in the poem about Governor Haley, or there's nothing sort of overtly political in it. But the sense of it, I think, was not something they wanted expressed at the inauguration.
A number of your poems in this collection do address that subject. You do look back at the history of South Carolina. Tell us about that. Tell us about South Carolina, about the history, about the weather, whatever you want to say about South Carolina, because I know this is a big part of your inspiration.
Yes. Well, I mean, South Carolina is a place people associate with vacations, right? People go there. It's beautiful. It's warm. It's tropical. Beautiful beaches, beautiful landscape. And I've certainly written a lot about that. As a poet, I just love to respond to the natural world. But the history is really dark. And when I first lived there 30 years ago, it really wasn't something you talked about much. And little by little, it's become a bigger part of the narrative there. I think one out of every three African Americans has ancestors who came to the shores there. The wharf that the ships, the slave ships, was you know tied up in downtown Charleston before people were auctioned and sold to the plantations. At the time, it was the biggest wharf in the world. You know, so think about that. Now we have an International African American Museum right there. So that's the kind of thing that's starting to change. But there's a lot of ways that the history, that horrible history and sort of, you know, all through the Jim Crow era and racism still was sort of permeating institutions in the state. And I felt that this was kind of the place we were, and unless we talk about it and deal with it, there's not going to be a lot of healing and a lot of change. And, you know, you and I have talked a little bit about my friend Pat Conroy, and, you know, his writing and his ideas helped me understand that you can't really be a writer in South Carolina if you're not writing about the history of African Americans and their lives there. It's so much a part of the place. So I have written about it in various ways and learned a lot as well, self-educated, I guess, that way. But and I think how you look at that history determines how you look at contemporary issues with racism.
Mm. Pat Conroy, what a sweet man.
Yeah, I miss him. He used to say publicly, "There's my poet laureate."
Yeah.
And it meant so much to me because that when you're a young writer and, you know, having the sort of the king, you know, the person who's at the very pinnacle of their career support your writing is really important. And he was like that with so many people. He was a self-proclaimed blurb slut. That's what he used to say. He would always endorse your book. Might take 6 months, but he would write about your book on the back of your book.
Mm. Marjorie Wentworth joins us. Her new book is One River, One Boat, Occasional Poems and Other Stories. Do you have another poem for us?
Sure. How long? Short poem, long poem?
Whatever you want to read is fine.
I can read the title.
Most of your poems aren't that long.
No, I can read the title poem, I guess.
Okay.
Or
whatever you want to read is fine.
Anyone that you want to read. Actually, I think I'd like to read my poem I wrote after the Emanuel Church shooting, because I'm finding that the way it feels in Springfield now, the fear and the anger and the sadness, I've only felt that way in a community one other time, and that was after the horrible massacre at Emanuel Church in 2015. And it's a poem called Holy City, which is what they call Charleston because it's marked by so many steeples. And I was asked to write this in the days following. And there's an epigraph by Reverend Clemente Pinckney, who was murdered in the church. And it's "Only love can conquer hate. Holy City. Let us gather and be silent together like stones glittering in sunlight, so bright it hurts our eyes, emptied of tears and searching the sky for answers. Let us be strangers together as we gather in circles wherever we meet to stand hand in hand and sing hymns to the heavens and pray for the fallen and speak their names. Clemente, Cynthia, Tuanza, Ethel, Sharonda, Daniel, Myra, Susie, and DePayne. They are not alone as bells in the spires call across the wounded Charleston sky. We close our eyes and listen to the same stillness ringing in our hearts, holding on to one another like brothers, like sisters, because we know wherever there is love, there is God."
It's like a prayer and a eulogy, and sadly it reminds me of all these disturbed young men with their guns.
And we keep seeing it over and over. You know, that's exactly my intention. I wanted it to feel like a prayer and a eulogy. And I've read it in that church many times, and it's still the hardest poem I ever had to write or ever wrote. But it does, the feeling in the community is reminds me a lot of that. So in Springfield now, so different kind of different reasons, but when it's very unusual to see something affect a whole community, you know. It's very unusual.
Marjorie Wentworth, waxing poetic in the Book Nook today, right here in studio in Yellow Springs, and her book is One River, One Boat. How do you know when you have a poem? How do you know the feeling when it fills you up and you can empty it out and it's on the page and you say, okay, I'm finished?
That's a tough question. I do have poems that I never feel that way about, that just never quite get there. I write many drafts of poems before I feel that way. I don't think that's an easy, there's not one way to answer it, but there has to be a moment where you know, what is it? Emily Dickinson says when she knows she's reading a good poem, when she feels like the top of her head's coming off, that kind of feeling. And I don't think I've got that quote quite right. But there has to be something else besides just the words on the page and whatever else you're doing with structure, and that just, you've expressed this sort of ineffable feeling throughout that you nailed it. But sometimes I never get there. But it's a feeling more than anything, I think, a feeling more than anything. And then what's great is if you get the chance to read them, and sometimes, you know, you hear when you're reading a poem, you can sometimes hear a line or two that just doesn't sound quite right. So it's a very different process. I find that's really interesting. I always make my students read their poems out loud. And while they're reading them, they're like, oh, I hate that line. I said, that's why you're reading it out loud, because it's a different process happening in your mind.
Tell us about your students and your teaching.
Right now I'm teaching poetry at Wright State. I taught there last year, and I've taught at the College of Charleston and a couple other places, and these are the best poets I've ever taught. They're just fantastic poets. They're all juniors and seniors, and they just love writing. I get to class, they're already there. They love it, and they're really dedicated to it, and it's a joy. It's like one of those jobs, like, I get paid to do this. Lucky me. I love it.
So you actually can make a living as a poet. I know that's really a challenge for many poets to actually—
Well, I do a lot of other things. I'm only teaching one class right now, but I do love these students, yeah.
And is that one of the reasons you came to Ohio?
Yeah, originally my husband had been teaching at Wright State, teaching in the film department there, and he had been teaching in New York before that. There's no real film school in South Carolina, and when we both turned toward teaching— he had to leave the state to get a job, really, and because he pretty much had gotten out of production by then. And we just got sick of being apart. You know, it's not – some people say, oh, well, it's great. I'm like, no, after 3 years, I'm – you know, that's – and we really love it here. We really do. We really do.
And we were chatting before we began taping about how he was involved in a film project here in Yellow Springs.
Yes, and don't ask me – when it was, maybe you know. You know.
It's probably 25 years ago, I'm guessing.
Yes, he's friends with Ed Radke, who you know, who I think, didn't he grow up here, I think, or around here?
He did grow up around here, yes.
And was doing this film, Dreamcatcher. And I think our kids were little, so I didn't come out. And my husband co-produced it with Julia and Steve. And had this connection. Loved this town, loved this place. And then somehow through all that, he heard about the job at Wright State. He's not teaching at Wright State anymore. They've kind of reshuffled the whole department. But he loved teaching there for, you know, a couple of years. And so that's kind of how we ended up here.
I love how you just say Julia and Steve, like everyone out there is going to go, yeah, I know who she's
I'm
talking
sorry.
About. No, Julia. Nothing to be sorry about. That's how people talk about them.
In Yellow Springs, sure, and in film circles, sure. Mm-hmm. Steve Bogner and Julia Reichert. And I unfortunately never met Julia. He had done other projects with her. So they had, you know, years before, I think Ed as well, and they're, in film, people, if you work with a group that you really like to work with, you like to repeat that as much as possible. So,
well, I wasn't involved in the making of the film, but I was aware of it. And at the time, I was the music director here at the station, and Ed asked me if I could make some suggestions for some music for the soundtrack. And so I was listening to stuff, and if I found stuff I thought he might be interested in, I would get him a copy of it. And he actually did use a song I suggested by a totally obscure band.
Cool.
And I was like, okay, and it was kind of a thrill.
You got a little credit?
Yeah, I got a little credit at the end. So.
It's Ed, a wonderful film.
Ed, if you're
film.
Out there listening, thank you. I love it when they make a film and they remember to put my name in the credits.
Especially if you helped.
Especially if I helped.
You probably have an IMDb page, you know? You never.
No, I don't think so. No, I really doubt it. Well, Marjorie, what's next for you? Are you working on any projects that we should know about? Is there something going on in Springfield with the situation there? Tell us what you're up to.
Let's see. Book projects. I turned in a children's book. I write children's books with Kwame Alexander, and just turned in a book that he's publishing, actually, children's poems, which I never knew I would love writing until he talked me into it. And I have a sort of big revision of a novel in with my agent, so fingers crossed about that. And I'm pretty busy with this book, mostly in the South. I'm busy with this book. I'm going to be at a big literary festival in Charleston and some book events in Tennessee. And I don't know. I've got to redo my schedule on my website, but I am doing quite a few events. I'd like to be doing more events in Ohio. I hope to. And just busy with this book and writing new poems that are inspired by my life here in Ohio.
And you're trying to sell a novel. Mm-hmm. And just in these last few seconds, I want you to tell me what your novel's about.
My novel is called The Relay Team, and it's about a group of friends who run track in high school, and the little sister of one of them is murdered, and they never find the murderer. And this is based on facts, based on my friend's brother, actually. And then 15, 20 years later, as adults, they kind of figure it out. So it's really the story of the way an unsolved murder as a wound can just pull through the lives of people affected by it in a community. And then it's also a story that celebrates friendship and, fingers crossed. I've been working on it for quite a while. It's very different than writing a poem.
And you have an agent who is trying to find a home for this.
Yes.
And what kind of publishers are you looking at?
I'm not sure because she just got my revision.
Okay.
I'm going to see her in November.
And that manuscript is how long at this point?
It's about, 350 pages.
Okay.
Not too long.
All right.
We'll see. She had read earlier versions and took me about a year to get it back where she, get it. Incorporate her suggestions and,
Good luck with that.
Thank you.
My guest has been Marjorie Wentworth, and we've been talking about her new book. It's called One River, One Boat, Occasional Poems and Other Stories. And she was the Poet Laureate in South Carolina from 2003 to 2020. And for the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis. Thanks, as always, for tuning in.